This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. Thanks for joining me today for the show, and I hope your Sunday is going well. Don't eat all that Halloween candy. Save it for the kids tomorrow, huh? We've got two fine stories from last week as Marguerite Gallerini gets the perspectives of some fellow French citizens on our crazy U.S. presidential election. Also, Emily Richardson Lorente has the story of the Rwandans who are here in Virginia for a little while, sharing their painting and music, and hoping to take back some support for their children's art school back in Rwanda. But first, we wrapped up our series of conversations with candidates for Congress this past week. Earlier in October, I spoke with the two 5th District candidates. In September, I talked with Democrat Kai Degner running in the 6th District. A few days ago, I talked with the man he's challenging, Bob Goodlatte, the incumbent Republican representing the 6th District in the House, which covers much of the Shenandoah Valley, from Front Royal through Harrisonburg and Lexington, south to Roanoke, stretching west to Highland and Bath counties and east to Lynchburg. Bob Goodlatte has represented the district since 1993. We talked about the prospects for immigration reform and his approach to serving the constituents in the 6th District, even those who don't share his conservative views. But we begin here with his comments on the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. I didn't ask him about that, but given the news last week that premiums for a few million people who have policies through the health insurance exchanges are going way up next year, he mentioned it as one of his goals to repeal the act, which Republicans in Congress have tried and failed to do over 5 years with dozens of attempts.
We need to repeal Obamacare. It's proved to be a disaster. We saw that as evidence again yesterday when the administration announced that expected rates increasing for this coming year are in the range of 25%. That is totally unsustainable. We need to replace it. Okay. With healthcare reforms that are more patient-centered, that give patients more choices and promote more competition.
The uninsured rate has gone down to 11% in the last few years since the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. That's down from 18%. That's about a 33% decrease. Given that there are problems with the Affordable Care Act, isn't that a good thing that the uninsured rate has come down, and isn't that something that can be salvaged without scrapping the entire program? Isn't there a way to reform it, working with other Republicans and Democrats in Congress?
I think you have to scrap the entire program and look at other ways to help people get health insurance. And the reason is this. What has been accomplished with Obamacare, with some more people getting health insurance, has been at a tremendous price. The price has both been in terms of the choice that individuals and businesses who provide health insurance to their employees have to make. Those have been very tightly limited because the government has simply stepped in and mandated that all kinds of things have to be covered by all health insurance. And the result of that is that instead of a business being able to look and say, well, this is how much I can afford for my employees, they now have a much higher hill to climb. If they're a small business, more and more of them, they're below the limits, are determining they simply can't afford to provide health insurance, putting it over on the individual. The individual then has to go into what are called exchanges. The exchanges are not affordable. The government is trying to use taxpayer dollars that were not dedicated for this purpose to provide this. So the cost is going up not only to individuals and businesses, but also to the government itself. That is currently being litigated in the courts. Yet again, another example of Obamacare's unintended consequences and why we need to do things like allow people to choose health insurance plans from across the country, not just in the area where they are living. We need to do things like have medical liability reform, something that President Obama promised but has never delivered upon. It was not included in Obamacare when it was finally brought forward. And one of the reasons why I and a great many other people in the Congress voted against it at the outset and why we've continued to vote to repeal it. There are a few good things in there, one of which already existed prior to Obamacare, and that is community health centers. We have one here in Harrisonburg. We have more around the country. It did increase funding for that. And I would certainly continue that. Why? Because the value that the taxpayer receives for the amount of care that's provided, primary care to many millions of Americans, is a very, very good way to provide an important component of healthcare to a lot of people. We have those around the 6th District. We have them around the country, and we should encourage them to continue. Obamacare didn't create them, but it did expand them, and I would keep that expansion.
Well, there's another provision in the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, that is fairly popular. That is getting rid of pre-existing conditions for health care. Another provision was allowing children, I think up to the age of 26, to be on their parents' health care policies. Is that something you would keep in there?
Well, I wouldn't keep those, but I would go about reforming healthcare in such a way that people are incentivized to be able to keep their children on their plans. And with regard to pre-existing conditions, both of the Republican alternative plans that have been offered for years now and the Republican Better Way agenda plan that is available online right now at abetterway.gop. All provide for protection against pre-existing condition exclusions.
Immigration reform is, again, this year a big topic for national discussion. And I know you've been working on some smaller pieces of immigration reform. What do you think are the prospects for Republicans and Democrats agreeing on a comprehensive immigration reform bill, something like the bipartisan bill that passed the U.S. Senate in 2013 but died in the House? And are you open to some kind of legal status, at least for the so-called dreamers, those who were brought to this country as children?
Well, first of all, that legislation failed of its own weight. Many of the people who actually supported it in the Senate later withdrew their support for it. So we have to take a different approach. I recognized that back then, and that's why we took and continue to take in the House a step-by-step approach to immigration reform, starting with enforcement of the law. I think the biggest problem that immigration reform has today is that people see this government as not enforcing our immigration laws. And as a result of that, there's tremendous mistrust with the administration. So I hope whoever's elected president is going to take a different approach to that and start with the premise that while we're a nation of immigrants, there isn't a person who is a citizen of the United States who can't go back a few generations or several generations and find at least someone in their family who came to this country to better their lives for themselves or their family. But it is also a nation of laws, and respect for the rule of law is what is really lacking in our immigration policy today. So the House Judiciary Committee has worked very hard to pass bills out of the committee that address that, and at least one has been signed into law by President Obama. There are others that have passed through the House of Representatives and sit over in the United States Senate. Next, you have to deal with legal immigration. There are many important legal immigration programs that are not working the way they were intended, and the committee has passed out of its jurisdiction bills to reform our legal immigration program. I think only when you have done those would it be appropriate to look at what kind of status we should have for some of the people who are not lawfully present in the United States. Until you rebuild the trust of the American people that our laws are going to be enforced and that people who abide by our laws and go through a legal immigration process are being handled in an appropriate fashion, which in my opinion they are not today, should you look at the fact that people have broken the laws and entered the country illegally.
I want to get back to something that you said during the debate with Kai Degner, that your constituents in the 6th District are conservative.
A majority of them are. I'm certainly not saying all of them are.
Well, that's my question is then how do you reach out to, if not a majority of your constituents, certainly many of them who may see a larger role for government in things such as health care or gun control and may not consider themselves conservative?
Well, I represent my constituents, and that means reflecting the views of a majority of them, but I also have to represent my constituents from the standpoint of my own conscience, what I think is the right thing to do. I think that is something that I work very hard to do every day. I, as I indicated, listen to my constituents. I have telephone town hall meetings. I have other community meetings with different groups and organizations. Just recently, I attended a Stop the Violence program that was sponsored by the mayor of Roanoke and the new police chief in Roanoke to hear ideas about how we can make sure that these very unfortunate police shootings that have taken place, both shootings where officers have sometimes done things under questionable circumstances, and in other instances where people have actually shot and murdered police officers, totally the wrong way to address this problem. So in that regard, I worked with John Conyers, the ranking Democrat on the committee, to establish a task force, a working group of six members on the Republican side and six members on the Democratic side. About half are members of the Judiciary Committee, half are in the House of Representatives, but not on the committee. We've traveled to Detroit. We've held roundtable discussions in Washington. We're right now planning a visit to Atlanta, and we're working very hard to promote a dialogue across the country, but it really has to take place community by community of people working with each other, community leaders, police officers, local elected officials, sheriffs, people in the African-American community where a lot of this is focused. They all need to come together, share their concerns, share their ideas, and come up with ways to make sure that this is brought around to a situation where people have respect for each other and people have respect for law enforcement, which is designed to keep people safe, but they can't do as good a job keeping people safe when they have a situation where individuals are shooting at police and not allowing them the opportunity to do their job in some communities.
Congressman Goodlatte, thank you very much for taking the time today. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Well, thank you.
You'll find my entire conversation with Mr. Goodlatte at our website. There is a lot more to it, including his defense of Donald Trump, whom he still supports for president. And you can also listen to my interviews with Goodlatte's opponent, Kai Degner, and the two candidates for the 5th District seat, Jane Dittmar and Tom Garrett, as well. During her summer internship at WMRA, Marguerite Gallerini, who is from France, spent some time exploring the differences and similarities between the ways that Americans and the French approach today's world. In the last few weeks, that's included the global refugee crisis and how we view work and vacation time. In her final story in this series, Marguerite explored how the American presidential election campaign is being viewed from the French perspective.
Julia Brown, a graduate student at the École Normale Supérieure, a top research and public administration school, discusses the focus on personal background versus political background.
Apparently everybody hates Hillary Clinton, which I really can't understand why at this point. And not everybody hates Trump, which I really can't understand why either. The thing is, with this election, there hasn't really been any debate regarding ideas. It's really all been about the personalities.
Matthew Perrault, a French teacher and PhD student in literature at the University of Virginia, agrees.
Yeah, the persona, the charisma is probably more important here than in France, I would say. Like, French people might be more interested in, like, maybe not the program itself, probably not, but at least maybe more fascinated by the career or the studies that the person would have made.
French people tend to make analogies between Donald Trump and some French politicians like former right-wing president Nicolas Sarkozy or Marine Le Pen, the leader of the far-right party National Front. But French observers see some differences.
I wouldn't compare Trump to Marine Le Pen. I mean, I'm no fan of Marine Le Pen, but she's a professional politician and she knows what she's doing.
That's Professor Pierre Gervais, who specializes in American politics and economy at the Sorbonne University in Paris. For the record, the National Front was once led by Jean-Marie Le Pen, the father of current leader Marine Le Pen.
Actually, they got rid of Jean-Marie Le Pen, which in terms of behavior was actually close to Trump. It became clear that they couldn't function efficiently in the French system with somebody who's not at least serious looking.
Gervais also points out that the French party system makes for a government less dominated by the two main left and right parties and relying more on coalitions. That way, it allows for more representation and party diversity. Also, the election of party leaders is internal to parties in France, not up for a popular election as in the US primary system. So for both historical and sociological reasons, the possibility for a politician like Trump to become the national leader is less likely in France. Now, could the outcome of this American election influence the French one?
The election in the U.S. is important for the entire world, that's for sure, because of the partnership we have with this country. because of the trade we have with the country. And I'm pretty sure politicians in France are watching very closely the debates and how it goes here. I don't know about the coming election if Sarkozy will try to imitate Trump in some ways. Hopefully not.
But according to Professor Gervais and Serena Albert, a marine biologist graduate from the Sorbonne University, this interest in U.S. elections is not that influential.
I wouldn't say that they influence, really, because what I hear in the media or from people that I talk to, they're much more concerned about French problems.
The French are fairly insular, and little I've read, there is a mixture of sort of fear to a certain extent, amusement, and very little understanding of what's going on. And there is this vague apprehension of, you know, what would happen if they actually elected Trump. But since at this point, the election of Trump is very highly unlikely, so you do get coverage, but not that much.
What I'm hoping is if Trump does get elected, maybe French people will be afraid of voting for our own extreme right party. I'm hoping he's giving us an example of what not to do.
French elections are less than a year away, with the first round coming up in April 2017. Chloe Berthelon, a French-American business student at UVA, is excited because it is the first year she will be able to vote in both elections.
I think it is interesting that the American process is drawn out to be so, so, so long, whereas the French process seems much shorter. I told my grandma in France that I was going to be in Lyon for their elections, and she's like, oh yeah, that is coming up, huh? Whereas for us, it's like the past year we've been talking about it.
Whatever the American election outcome may be, they all said they were going to miss Barack Obama.
Well, I'm really, really not convinced by Trump, but I'm not very convinced by Hillary Clinton either, so I think that in any case, it won't be for a better change.
For WMRA News, I am Marguerite Gallerini.
It is 6,351 miles as the crow flies between Kigali, the capital of Rwanda, and Charlottesville. But last month, a small group of artists made that journey, and they've been delighting school children in the area ever since. WMRA's Emily Richardson Lorente has that story.
Pop into Piper Gary's music class at Woodbrook Elementary School on a regular day, and this is what it may sound like.
All right, deep breath. Here we go.
But recently, Mrs. Gary's third graders were treated to a different kind of music.
Those are Rwandan drums. Have you seen them before?
That's visiting teacher Pacifique Nyonsenga with his brother Patrick on the drums. They're here from Rwanda on a four-month trip to the U.S.
So, how are you doing?
Good.
Are you happy this morning?
Yes.
All right.
So this is actually Pacifique's third time in the U.S. visiting schools, so he knows how to handle a class of rowdy third graders, now anyway.
The first time it was like, oh my God, because it was hard for me to even just make them sit down and follow me because everybody want to touch me, everybody want to hug me. But this time, I'm getting used to it.
We are from a place called Kigali. Do you know Kigali? Do you know Rwanda? Do you know Africa?
Pacifique isn't really expecting these kids to know much about his country or its story.
They don't care what's happening in the world until those things happen to them. They are kids. They are innocent.
One, two, three, let's go!
Pacifique was an innocent himself back in 1994 when the Rwandan genocide began. It lasted only 100 days, but an estimated 800,000 people died. 2 years old at the time, Pacifique was separated from his father and siblings and left alone with a mother who was too shattered to care for herself, let alone him. For years afterwards, he lived on the streets of Kigali until a Canadian missionary took him in and helped put him through school.
After I finished my high school, I decided to pay forward.
He paid it forward by founding a nonprofit called the Neo Cultural Center and Art Gallery in Kigali. Here, 120 deeply impoverished street children learn the arts, painting, dancing, traditional drumming and singing, like what you hear right now. Pacifique's hope is that these skills will help his kids earn a living and give them the confidence they'll need to tackle what lies ahead, whatever lies ahead.
to be able to serve and help 120 kids, you need money, you need people to help, you need everything.
You ready? All right.
So Pacifique is here in the U.S. to raise awareness and funds. In addition to his drums, he's brought boxes of original paintings to share and hopefully sell. He also brought this guy.
My name is Fred Mafijiri. But I go by Figgy.
Figgy is a full-time artist in Rwanda, and he's brought several of his eye-popping nature paintings here. Think parrots and elephants made of exploding rainbows.
What's that color called?
Orangish. Orange.
Today, Figgy's teaching a class of fifth graders to paint a convincing giraffe.
And I'm going to show you how we're going to mix them, right?
Back home in Rwanda, Figgy teaches lessons like this at Pacifique's Cultural Center. For the kids there, Figgy says, art is a kind of therapy.
I think it's supposed to help them live through this kind of, you know, hard world, you know. So art is a good thing.
You're going to want to wash your brush.
It's been a real learning experience for me.
That's Jim Respis, a sculptor based at the McGuffey Art Center here in Charlottesville. He's one of the many people who helped arrange this trip for Pacifique, Patrick, and Figgy. He's driving them around, making sure they eat, even hosting them in his home for a month while they're in Charlottesville.
I mean, I feel like I'm getting the best part of the whole deal, because I get to hang out with these guys.
What do you hope students this age get from meeting Pacifique?
Ah, gosh. It humanizes the world in a way that looking at a map, looking at pictures, it doesn't work as well. And it normalizes what is a big, scary world.
Exactly. Can we do everything?
At a time when support for foreign aid and trade seems pretty low in this country, and fear of foreigners seems pretty high, Pacifique's visit is a bright spot, reminding these kids here in Virginia that people from other places are still people, kind, funny, resilient, and with lots to offer for those who welcome them.
Yes! 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 Give me a five, everybody! That was so cool!
For WMRA News, I'm Emily Richardson-Lorente.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Ollie Frazier, Les and Johnny Grady, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, the Just Pax Fund, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. If you'd like to learn more about how we fund our news and how you can help, go to WMRA.org, mouse over News, then click on News and Information Fund. Find all of our stories from the newsroom at WMRA.org, and be sure to click like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio and follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. I'm Bob Levicki, WMRA's News Director and Morning Edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.